Hello, everybody. This is Salil Tripathi from the Institute for Human Rights and Business. And I'm speaking with Srilata Batliwala, who is one of the advisors of IHRB, the Institute, as well as a leading expert on gender and equity around the world. Srilata, thanks for joining us. We are speaking as part of this project we have on discrimination, equality, inequality, and gender-based relationships. And in that context, we are particularly looking at what happens in the interplay between women who are at work or women who are consuming services from companies and what happens there in the whole idea of gender-based discrimination. So thank you for joining us. Tell us where we are today. I mean, you know, we have had the International Women's Day celebrated for several years now, and we have had many campaigns built around it. And companies are also swearing by a lot of the principles for gender-based equity. Have we made much progress?
I think we have. I think it would be unfair to not credit the enormous strides that have been made and to not credit the fact that much of that progress has been as a result of the very, very strong and passionate and sustained commitment and activism and advocacy of the women's movement in different parts of the world. So I, for one, am not from the school of thought that dismisses what has been achieved over the last 50 years. I honestly believe that the women's movement has made very deep and tectonic shifts in the way the world views issues of gender equality, violence against women, and the rights of all people to be free of discrimination based on their gender identities.
And how are companies doing in that regard? You mentioned that some of them have made great strides. Is it an even progress? Is this largely a northern phenomenon? Or are there champions in the global south as well?
I think it's easy to take a view that it's largely northern or, let's say, multinational corporations that have made the greatest strides forward. But I think that would again be unfair and a misleading view of the reality. Because if you look at, for instance, the very, very strong legislation that was introduced in India, and the process of building that legislation was more than a decade of activism against sexual harassment in the workplace, what is called the POSH Act in India, that was the result of very localized, very much India-based issues and India-based activism. And in fact, at the initiative of many Indian companies who came forward and said, this is not okay, and we need to have very strong guidelines. And I know many Indian companies which long before the legislation were actually taking a very serious view of things like sexual harassment at the workplace. Similarly, I know that there are many companies in different parts of the world which promoted women into leadership positions, gave them positions of, you know, serious responsibility. I don't think it's an accident, for instance, that so many of the CEOs of multinational corporations are actually third world women. In fact, several of them are Indian women. I think it's a problem of what gets the highest profile. So it's like the Me Too campaign, the high profile of that campaign, because famous Hollywood actresses started coming out and saying, this happened to me, and calling out their harassers, a sense that this kind of activism is rooted in a very Western, liberal kind of human rights framework. But the fact is that predecessors to the Me Too campaign are very much older. And even if we just think back a few years to the whole harass map process that the Egyptian women started as part of the post-Arab Spring kind of activism. So I think there's a tendency to give a very high profile, especially by the media, to certain steps forward or progress or advances made in the West or in the multinational corporate sort of environment. And very few stories are told of the things that have happened very locally in unsung quarters of the world.
I mean, that's one of the things we would like to set it right when we embark on our own project. So thank you for that. But one question I had, that you mentioned the fact that there are more and more women at senior level positions in large corporations, including some from the developing world. Is that a prerequisite or is it a coincidence? What I'm trying to get at is that, is it necessary for women to be in top management for a company to be more sensitive towards gender-based issues? Or can it be done regardless? Because there is a counter view that, you know, merely because you have a woman CEO doesn't make a company woman friendly.
Absolutely. I mean, I agree with that. I just cited that as an example because it's one of the sort of widely recognized indicators. But I completely agree that it's far from the best indicator. And in fact, the parallel I would draw is, in fact, with women in politics, you know, and all the excitement and activism that went into getting quotas for women to get elected to parliaments and local councils and so on. And we know that that hasn't necessarily changed the culture of politics because more women are in there and that the picture is much more uneven. So I agree that I think companies can have very strong gender equality policies without any visible women in leadership, and vice versa. You can have very strong women's faces in the leadership of the company and very poor environments inside those companies for women workers, you know. So it is a more complex and nuanced situation. But then the question I always get asked, which is in fact, I think, a conundrum, is does that mean that we should not ask for quotas in politics or not ask for affirmative action? So it's not an either or. I think that's very clear. I think we need both. We need the symbolic representation at all decision-making levels. But I think what I'd like to say in this discussion, which I think is the most important underlying factor, is we need to actually look at the deep cultures of these organizations, whether they're corporates, whether they're NGOs. Look at what's happened recently in the case of Oxfam and the whole terrible incidents of what many call sextortion that came out. I think what we really have to do, Salil, is look at the deep culture of these organizations. This is often the hidden culture. It's not the visible culture. It's not the formal policies and, you know, practices. It's about what is actually going on in these invisible but very real spaces where people are walking into the office with the same attitudes, biases, prejudices, aggression, masculinities, patriarchal values that they practice in their private space. And companies and other organizations like, you know, NGOs, I think they haven't really tackled this problem. They don't know how to address this issue of people practicing these values that often contravene the formal values of the organization inside the organization, but in these sort of subtle, hidden, often devious ways. No, I think the challenge for all of us is how do we, first of all, analyze the true deep culture of an organization and how do we transform that? Because we can have the best laws, we can have the best policies, we can have the quotas, and still not tackle this deeper hidden stuff. So I think that's where the challenge lies. And there's some very interesting, innovative new thinking and experiments that are being developed, especially by organizational behavior people, in how to tackle the deep culture and actually transform that layer of the organization to make all the formal policies meaningful.
That's good to hear. And obviously, this goes into the heart of the human rights debate as well, which is of cultural relativism, where certain cultures say that we do not do this because this is wrong according to our culture. So you may have the law, You may have an international agreement and a treaty, and you may have a company, but it comes face to face with a much deep-rooted culture. So I think that's the fascinating struggle that lies ahead.
Absolutely.
Thanks so much, Srilata, and all the best with your work.